We've heard the speech he made, almost an hour's worth of speeches, why he was going into Ukraine. He has much larger ambitions in Ukraine. He wants to, in fact, reestablish the former Soviet Union. That's what this is about. And I think that his ambitions are completely contrary to the place where the rest of the world has arrived.
All right, let's talk to Jennifer Griffin, who's at the Pentagon. So you heard the president talk about the ambitions. What are you hearing from Defense Department sources about what the maybe next logical step would be? Say he consolidates control of Kiev, he has the country in his hands. Does he move north into Poland, totally north into the Baltic, south into Romania? What could possibly be a next step?
Well, it's interesting, Jesse. U.S. intelligence, Western intelligence, has been keeping an eye on a little town, an important town in Belarus called Brest, which is about 120 miles from the Polish border. There are satellite images showing that Vladimir Putin has placed quite a large amount of forces in that area. Now, those forces would be a quick drive due south down to Lviv in Ukraine, but they also are mighty close to Poland inside Belarus, which has become a vassal state of Vladimir Putin. And so all eyes right now are certainly on the Baltics, Poland, Romania. One of the reasons that you hear a lot of concern about Lithuania and Poland in particular is you go back to Vladimir Putin's own speech on Monday, which also was referenced in his July 12th writings about why Ukraine is not a separate country from Russia, which he sent out to his armed forces. And he mentions in this twisted history lesson that he tried to give the world, he mentioned Poland and Lithuania and the fact that they became Catholic, but in fact, they were really part of the Russian Orthodox Church and linked to Ukraine. That certainly has NATO and NATO allies concerned. NATO is going to be meeting tomorrow. The North Atlantic Council has been called. All 30 member states will be meeting, and it will be very interesting to see if they decide to call up the 40,000 strong NATO response force, which would fall under General Todd Walters, the American Supreme Allied Commander in Europe. And some of those 7,000 troops that President Biden announced tonight would be going to Germany, may be a part of that force if it is, in fact, agreed to enact that.
Thanks, Jen. Geraldo has a question, I believe.
What in the world, Jen, are they waiting for to activate that that force of 40,000? What could be worse than this?
Well, it's really interesting, Geraldo, and I think you have to understand the bind that they find themselves in. And if you listen to what Putin said last night, the warning to NATO, that thinly veiled warning in which he really was threatening, it sounded like, to nuclear weapons. The messaging that he's been doing to NATO, whether it was those nuclear exercises that he oversaw last weekend, that was designed to send a signal, reminding people he's a nuclear power. Do not come and interfere with what he has going on in Ukraine after the invasion starts. That message, one of the things that NATO is trying to calibrate is, on the one hand, they want to send forces to reassure their eastern flank into Poland and Baltics, but they also don't want to overplay that hand and play into Vladimir Putin's warped narrative that would give him then an excuse to think that the U.S. and NATO was part of this conflict. So you have a situation where NATO has to move very carefully. This is a chess game. You can't start sending weapons in to the, as much as I've heard today, and of course, all of our hearts go out to the Ukrainian armed forces and their pleas for more weaponry. Once the U.S. and NATO starts, after the invasion began, starts sending in weaponry, they become a party to that conflict, and they give justification then for Putin if he decides to send his military forces beyond Ukraine. And so that is what is being sort of debated and calibrated right now and will be debated in that North Atlantic Council meeting tomorrow.
Judge.
So very quickly, Jennifer, and this may just be a follow-up on the last question, but my question is this. If the NATO response team is called upon, or the NATO response force is called upon, their only mission, their only location or site can be in NATO countries. They can do nothing to help the people of Ukraine.
Exactly, Judge. Exactly. There are 40,000 forces. They would stay within NATO Article 5 allies. But just remember how very close those allied members are. I mean, Romania just across the border, not far from the Ukraine. They're on the Ukraine border. Poland. You know, this is we're now eyeball to eyeball. We haven't been this close to Russian forces since I remember back in Kosovo when we in 1997 when Russian forces hopscotched over the 82nd Airborne because they were mad that NATO had gone into Kosovo. So this is really, we're in uncharted territory, and what you're seeing the Pentagon and NATO try to do is not to escalate anything. They want to send a firm response, but they don't want to get on an escalatory ladder.
Right. Thank you.
So all right, thanks so much, Jen. I believe we have Jen Psaki, who's holding a White House briefing right now.
He's going to give some brief comments at the top, take a few questions, then we'll do some briefing after then. And I'll just stay at the top for anyone who needs to leave for TV. Feel free to go. It's all fine. I will turn it over to Dalit now.
Thank you, Jen. Good to see all of you again. But this is a briefing I never wanted to give. I'd like to start by saying the prayers of the entire world are with the people of Ukraine today as they suffer an unjustified, unprovoked, and premeditated attack by the Russian military forces. President Biden has said from the start of this crisis, if Putin chooses to invade, the cost to Russia will be immediate and profound, to its financial system, to its economy, to its technology base, and to its strategic position in the world. As the world has now witnessed, Putin has made his choice. He rejected diplomacy and chose war. And today, the president has announced our response. Because of Putin's choices, his flagrant violation of international law, and his utter disregard for the principles that underpin peace and security across the world, we will now ensure his decision is remembered as a strategic failure. Today, we impose an unprecedented package of financial sanctions and export restrictions in lockstep with our allies and partners that will isolate Russia from the global financial system, shut down its access to cutting-edge technology, and undercut Putin's strategic ambitions to diversify and modernize his economy. Let me walk you through a few specifics, and I'll be happy to take questions. On financial sanctions, I stood at this podium on Tuesday and said we would impose the most severe sanctions ever levied on Russia if Putin proceeded with the invasion. Today,
Ukraine. He has much larger ambitions in Ukraine. He wants to, in fact, reestablish the former Soviet Union. That's what this is about. And I think that his ambitions are completely contrary to the place where the rest of the world has arrived.
All right, let's talk to Jennifer Griffin, who's at the Pentagon. So you heard the president talk about the ambitions. What are you hearing from Defense Department sources about what the maybe next logical step would be? Say he consolidates control of Kiev, he has the country in his hands. Does he move north into Poland, totally north into the Baltic, south into Romania? What could possibly be a next step?
Well, it's interesting, Jesse. U.S. intelligence, Western intelligence, has been keeping an eye on a little town, an important town in Belarus called Brest, which is about 120 miles from the Polish border. There are satellite images showing that Vladimir Putin has placed quite a large amount of forces in that area. Now, those forces they would be a quick drive due south down to Lviv in Ukraine, but they also are mighty close to Poland inside Belarus, which has become a vassal state of Vladimir Putin. And so all eyes right now are certainly on the Baltics, Poland, Romania. One of the reasons that you hear a lot of concern about Lithuania and Poland in particular is you go back to Vladimir Putin's own speech on Monday, which also was referenced in his July 12th writings about why Ukraine is not a separate country from Russia. Russia, which he sent out to his armed forces. And he mentions in this twisted history lesson that he tried to give the world, he mentioned Poland and Lithuania and the fact that they became Catholic, but in fact, they were really part of the Russian Orthodox Church and linked to Ukraine. That certainly has NATO and NATO allies concerned. NATO is going to be meeting tomorrow. The North Atlantic Council has been called. All 30 member states will be meeting, and it will be very interesting to see if they decide to call up the 40,000 strong NATO response force, which would fall under General Todd Walters, the American Supreme Allied Commander in Europe. And some of those 7,000 troops that President Biden announced tonight would be going to Germany, may be a part of that force if it is, in fact, agreed to enact that.
Thanks, Jen. Geraldo has a question, I believe.
What in the world, Jen, are they waiting for to activate that that force of 40,000? What could be worse than this?
Well, it's really interesting, Geraldo, and I think you have to understand the bind that they find themselves in. And if you listen to what Putin said last night, the warning to NATO, that thinly veiled warning in which he really was threatening, it sounded like, to nuclear weapons. The messaging that he's been doing to NATO, whether it was those nuclear exercises that he oversaw last weekend, that was designed to send a signal, reminding people he's a nuclear power. Do not come and interfere with what he has going on in Ukraine after the invasion starts. That message, one of the things that NATO is trying to calibrate is, on the one hand, they want to send forces to reassure their eastern flank into Poland and Baltics, but they also don't want to overplay that hand and play into Vladimir Putin's warped narrative that would give him then an excuse to think that the U.S. and NATO was part of this conflict. So you have a situation where NATO has to move very carefully. This is a chess game. You can't start sending weapons in to the, as much as I've heard today, and of course, all of our hearts go out to the Ukrainian armed forces and their pleas for more weaponry. Once the U.S. and NATO starts, after the invasion began, starts sending in weaponry, they become a party to that conflict, and they give justification then for Putin if he decides to send his military forces beyond Ukraine. And so that is what is being sort of debated and calibrated right now and will be debated in that North Atlantic Council meeting tomorrow.
Judge.
So very quickly, Jennifer, and this may just be a follow-up on the last question, but my question is this. If the NATO response team is called upon, or the NATO response force is called upon, their only mission, their only location or site can be in NATO countries. They can do nothing to help the people of Ukraine.
Right. Exactly, Judge. Exactly. There are 40,000 forces. They would stay within NATO Article 5 allies. But just remember how very close those allied members are. I mean, Romania, just across the border, not far from the Ukraine, or they're on the Ukraine border. Poland, you know, we're now eyeball to eyeball. We haven't been this close to Russian forces since I remember back in Kosovo when we, in 1997, when Russian forces hopscotched over the 82nd Airborne because they were mad that NATO had gone into Kosovo. So this is really, we're in uncharted territory, and what you're seeing the Pentagon and NATO try to do is not to escalate anything. They want to send a firm response, but they don't want to get on an escalatory ladder.
Right. Thank you.
So all right, thanks so much, Jen. I believe we have Jen Psaki, who's holding a White House briefing right now.
He's going to give some brief comments at the top, take a few questions, then we'll do some briefing after then. And I'll just stay at the top for anyone who needs to leave for TV. Feel free to go. It's all fine. I will turn it over to Dalit now.
Thank you, Jen. Good to see all of you again. But this is a briefing I never wanted to give. I'd like to start by saying the prayers of the entire world are with the people of Ukraine today as they suffer an unjustified, unprovoked, and premeditated attack by the Russian military forces. President Biden has said from the start of this crisis, if Putin chooses to invade, the cost to Russia will be immediate and profound, to its financial system, to its economy, to its technology base, and to its strategic position in the world. As the world has now witnessed, Putin has made his choice. He rejected diplomacy and chose war. And today, the president has announced our response. Because of Putin's choices, his flagrant violation of international law, and his utter disregard for the principles that underpin peace and security across the world, we will now ensure his decision is remembered as a strategic failure. Today, we impose an unprecedented package of financial sanctions and export restrictions in lockstep with our allies and partners that will isolate Russia from the global financial system, shut down its access to cutting-edge technology, and undercut Putin's strategic ambitions to diversify and modernize his economy. Let me walk you through a few specifics, and I'll be happy to take questions. On financial sanctions, I stood at this podium on Tuesday and said, we would impose the most severe sanctions ever levied on Russia if Putin proceeded with the invasion. Today, we're following through. We will impose sanctions on Russia's two largest financial institutions, Sberbank and VTB, which together hold more than half of the Russian banking system's assets, over $750 billion in total. For VTB, we will freeze all of its assets touching the U.S. financial system and prohibit U.S. persons from doing any business with the bank. For Sberbank, we will sever its access to the U.S. financial system. We'll also freeze the assets of and prohibit any business dealings with three additional Russian banks with combined assets of over $70 billion. We'll also restrict U.S. investors from providing debt or equity financing for 13 of the most critical Russian state-owned enterprises, which combined have estimated assets nearing $1.5 trillion. And finally, we'll also impose sanctions on the executives at these state-owned institutions, as well as additional